A Texas kid listened to the radio and fooled around with the guitar and thought he could get away with doing anything he wanted to at an impossibly young age. And he imagined a beautiful story, which came true. Who knows what ending he might have dreamt up? The ending that occurred, really, 30 years ago today, was so useless and arbitrary and stupid that it had no place in anybody's dreams. Buddy Holly would have thought of something better. Here's his life, remembered by producer Rachel Murray.
In July 1957, Buddy Holly left Lubbock, Texas, with only one record climbing the charts. 5 months later, sporting capped teeth, a sharp suit, and horn-rimmed glasses, Holly debuted live on The Ed Sullivan Show. Like Elvis, only a year before, Holly had made it to primetime TV.
Buddy Holly! Buddy! Buddy, come back here.
I want to ask you a question. How old are all of you fellas?
Well, there's two 18, one 20, and I'm 21.
Where do you come from? Lubbock, Texas?
Lubbock, Texas, yes.
You go to school down there?
Well, we did until we got out of high school, finally.
Right after high school, you started playing together?
Yes, sir, that's right.
Your big hit right from the start, or has it been sort of a long...
Well, we've had a few rough times, I guess you say, but we've been real lucky getting it this quick.
Well, Texas, nice to have you up here.
Thank you.
Let's have a very nice hand for these Texas records.
The buckle of the Bible Belt accurately describes Holly's hometown of Lubbock. But West Texas towns such as Lubbock accepted the newer honky-tonk and western swing styles emerging from country music long before Nashville embraced it. Buddy studied the piano. He didn't like it. Holly wanted to play the guitar. His older brother Travis agreed to teach him, and according to Bill Griggs of the Buddy Holly Memorial Society, Holly learned a unique way of picking.
Buddy played the guitar wrong. Most people play down, up when they're stroking the guitar. Buddy played basically downstrokes in a lot of his music. Therefore, he had to play twice as fast. But it also gave him what we call rhythm lead. He kept hitting the bass chord on the guitar first. And that's why he had that unique sound that people even today cannot duplicate, because you have to play the guitar wrong to make it right.
If you knew Peggy Sue, then you'd know why I feel blue without Peggy, my Peggy Sue. Oh, well, I love you, girlies, I love you, Peggy Sue.
By the early 50s, Holly expanded his musical taste. Nightly, radio station KWKS out of Shreveport, Louisiana, played blues and rhythm and blues records, and Holly listened closely. Excited by these new sounds, Holly adapted them to his own emerging style, a blend of rockabilly with vocals reminiscent of Hank Williams.
Buddy really liked Hank, and if you listen to some of Hank Williams' things, Hank had that kind of a hiccup, the same thing that Buddy is now known for. And people have asked about the hiccup. Did Buddy do it on purpose, or did it come naturally? It did come naturally. Medically, it's called a glottal stop. And when you're trying to get air out of your throat so quick when you're singing, sometimes it will close up and suddenly release, and you get this sort of a hiccup sound.
Oh, hell, the little things you say and do make me want to be with you.
Elvis Presley was the rage across the country in 1956, and Decca Records wanted a piece of the action. Looking for a similar type of singer, Decca discovered Holly.
The way you dance and hold me tight, the way you kiss and say goodnight. Rave on, it's a crazy feeling, and I know it's got me reeling when you say I love you. Rave on.
One of the songs recorded in Nashville was That'll Be the Day, and according to Holly's drummer, J.I. Jerry Allison, John Wayne inspired the song.
We'd seen a movie called The Searchers with John Wayne, and he said, "That'll be the day," five times in there. And so we were sitting practicing, but he said, "Let's write a song." I said, "That'll be the day." He said, "That might be a good idea."
That'll be the day when you say goodbye. That'll be the day when you make me cry. You say you're gonna leave. You know it's a lifetime. That'll be the day when I die.
Decca couldn't cope with rock and roll, and those recordings, like the first version of That'll Be the Day, lacked Buddy's energy and drive. Dissatisfied, Holly left Nashville and drove 90 miles west of Lubbock to Clovis, New Mexico, to see Norman Petty. Petty, a songwriter and musician who died in 1984, had a couple of hits with his own trio. With his earnings, he built a state-of-the-art recording studio. Petty's reputation as a quality producer and engineer spread amongst local musicians. Aware that Roy Orbison's song, Ooby Dooby, and Buddy Knox's Party Doll were successfully recorded in Clovis, Holly, assisted by Petty, cut a second version of That'll Be the Day.
Well, you give me all your loving and your dirt and loving, all your hugs and kisses and your money too. Well, you know you love me, baby. Still, you tell me maybe that someday will I'll be new. Well, that'll be the day.
In addition to Allison on drums, bassist Joe B. Malden and guitarist Mickey Sullivan joined Holly, and the Crickets were formed. Occasionally, Vi Petty, Norman's wife, sat in on piano. Always experimenting, Vi recalls that Petty and Holly often got great results from everyday sounds.
But now Jerry played his hands on his jeans on every day, and it's just because while we were practicing there, well, Jerry was doing that, and Norman says, hey, we'll record it that way. So actually, that sound is Jerry playing, hitting his hands on his knees.
Every day, it's a getting closer, going faster than a roller coaster. Love like yours will surely come my way. Hey, hey, hey.
In the summer of 57, as their single moved up the charts, the Crickets flew east for their first tour. Allison remembers that it was an exciting time for the band.
And there'd been a black group called the Crickets. The fellow that booked us had never seen any promo pictures, or he'd just listened to the record, That'll Be the Day, and thought we were a black act, which really tickled us because that's exactly what we were trying to sound, more rhythm and blues than rockabilly at the time.
Everything went well until the band reached New York City. As the first white act ever booked into Harlem's Apollo Theater, the Crickets' initial reception was cold. Bill Griggs.
It was on the third day that Buddy said, we have to do something. So he turned around to his band, he says, just follow me, do what I do. And Buddy started playing that Bo Diddley riff, bump da da dum bump bump bump, and prancing around the stage and doing the Chuck Berry duck walk. And the audience started cheering, and he won them over.
In early 1958, the Crickets' records continually topped the charts in England, and British fans eagerly awaited the arrival of Buddy, J.I., and Joe B. In Britain, pop performers were usually soloists backed by a house band, singing someone else's songs. The Crickets wrote and sang their own compositions and sounded the same live as on record. This was something new. To British rockers such as Peter and Gordon, Freddie and the Dreamers, the Beatles, and the Rolling Stones, the Crickets were the quintessential rock and roll band. Inspired by the Crickets' example, the Beatles chose an insect name and cut a demo of That'll Be the Day. Crickets disbanded in late 1958, and in January 59, Holly went on tour with a new band. The bassist on this tour was a young Lubbock disc jockey named Waylon Jennings, whose first record, Jolie Blanc, was produced by Holly. In Clear Lake, Iowa, Holly chartered a plane for himself and his band to their next performance. During the evening, Jennings relinquished his seat to J.P. the Big Bopper Richardson. Holly's guitarist, Tommy Alsop, flipped a coin with singer Richie Valens for the remaining seat. Valens won.
Story in from Clear Lake, Iowa. Three of the nation's top rock and roll singing stars, Richie Valens, J.P. the Big Bopper Richardson, and Buddy Holly, died today with their pilot in the crash of a chartered plane. Following an appearance before...
The death of Buddy Holly ushered in a decline to American rock and roll. Elvis entered the Army, Little Richard found God, Eddie Cochran died in a car accident, and Chuck Berry went to jail. Motown and the Holly-inspired British Invasion did revive music in the mid-60s, but American teenagers forgot about Buddy. Interest increased in 1972 when Don McLean paid tribute to Holly in his hit song, American Pie. Columbia Pictures released The Buddy Holly Story in 1978. Although factually inaccurate, the film introduced a new generation of listeners to Holly's music. And in 1985, the recording industry created the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and voted Buddy Holly as one of the first musicians honored. For National Public Radio, this is Rachel Moray.
Well, all right, so I'm being foolish. Well, all right, let people know about the dreams and wishes you wish in the night when lights
it's a love. Well, all right, well, all right. We live and love with all our might. Well, all right, well, all right. Our lifetime love will be all right.